What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Bonus Point Podcast, recording live from Since 86 Studios. My name is TJ Olsen alongside Tavita Hulafia in the studio. Plus, we've got James Tesserero joining us all the way from Sydney, Australia via Zoom. And this week, the spring tours kick off for many international test sides. We're ready to talk all about the teams that will be taking on the Wallabies and the All Blacks during this tour. But before we get into this, though, I do want to chat briefly about the passing of a great rugby player, a proud Māori man, someone I've always looked up to in regards to Māori culture, and that's Sean Wainui. He tragically passed away in a car accident, leaving a wife and a few kids behind. A very talented rugby player playing for both the Crusaders and the Chiefs in Super Rugby. But he said his greatest rugby achievement was playing for the Māori All Blacks. Everybody who knew him or just knew about him knew he was a very proud Māori man, loved his culture. Yep. I got to meet him a couple of times when I was back in New Zealand. And like I said, he was a very proud man when it came to his Māori culture. He led huckers for many teams. He taught a lot of guys in who played for New Zealand a lot about the Māori culture. So for you guys, when we look at Sean and his rugby history and his history of his culture, what really sticks out for you guys when you guys think about Sean?
Man, honestly, if you ever watched a Māori All Blacks game, you saw Sean Wainui, whether he was leading the haka or just chilling out on the wing and trying to do something crazy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I liked him in the Chiefs jersey more than a Crusaders jersey. but every time he played, you can see that he wore his heart on his sleeve and he was definitely 100% in. I think the one thing about Sean, too, is he was a guy that actually really had to try. And he put a lot of hard work into making Super Rugby sides and to making the Māori All Blacks. And anyone that knew him knew exactly that he was one of those people that was definitely, what's the word, an adversary for hard work, courage, and making sure that you gave it your all. So he will be missed in the rugby community. And you can see just the effect of the loss of him in rugby, with teams all around the world paying their respects to him, and which, let's be really honest, is rarely seen. So, the after effects of him, his tragic passing, are going to be felt in rugby for a very long time.
Yeah, I think the two things that really stuck out for me was that he was only 25 years of age. That was something.
Isn't that crazy, dude? He did so much.
Yeah, he's been around the game for a long time. He's played a lot of age grade stuff for New Zealand. He's done a lot for the game, Super Rugby, NPC, Māori All Blacks, as we spoke about. But the other thing was that he was always the guy to look up to if you were an aspiring rugby player that was never the most talented or the best, because he wasn't the fastest, he wasn't the fittest, but he gave it his all. And I think he did. Consistency was one thing that really stuck out to me. He was 100%. Always consistent, always reliable. But James, I know you were looking at the video that he shared with his little boy of doing the haka and stuff. Obviously, that was a bit of a heart grabber. What really stuck out for you with Sean from your experiences watching him play?
Well, kind of off the field, I think a death like this is so tragic and shows how small and connected the rugby community is. Across the ditch here in Australia, every Kiwi player and coach kind of knows somebody who's friends with the family. And so it's actually kind of rocked the rugby community on both sides of the Pacific, of the Tasman, and just kind of shows how connected and small we are in terms of rugby. Mm-hmm. Very, very sad. For those who haven't seen the footage of him teaching his son the haka, get a box of Kleenex and press play. And it's pretty heart-wrenching stuff.
It is, definitely.
My allergies played up very badly. and then on the field, his legacy will be outstanding player. His best rugby was ahead of him, and he holds the Super Rugby record for most tries in a match when he scored 5 this year against
Montreal Stars.
And I don't think that will be broken anytime soon. So his kind of on-field legacy is secure in terms of that.
Definitely.
That's my memories of him, yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. So we'll send our love to Paige and the Wainui whānau across New Zealand. It's definitely a rough one. And I know a few players that played with him in a past season for the Bay of Plenty and for other teams. So we wish them all the best and hope they're doing as well as they can with something that happens unexpectedly like this. But let's jump into the rugby, because both the Wallabies and the All Blacks they're starting their spring tours, northern tours, whatever you want to call it, and they're going to be injecting some players from all around the world into their squads who haven't played together in some months and years. And I want to chat to you guys a little bit about how this could potentially disrupt the teams or the continuity, or adding fresh blood could even build to the team's momentum. So, James, we'll bounce right back to you. I think when we look at the Wallabies, they're probably going to have the most players that are coming from across all walks of life or all different parts of the world. How do you think that this is going to impact the Wallabies? Is it going to be positive? Is it going to be negative? What do you think?
Well, I think time will tell, but anytime you bring in fresh talent from outside the squad, you kind of get an uptick in your talent level and you take a hit in terms of your combinations and continuity. So we'll see whether we kind of gain more than we lose in that regard. But I think the Wallabies have always treated the spring tours as a bit of a development tool. So without ever devaluing what a test match is, the Wallabies always take a couple of young guys, pop a couple of surprising selections, and it's always done with a view to what does our team look like in 2 years at the World Cup. So I think kind of getting new talent, getting a bit weird with selections, having a look at guys that haven't played with us in a Wallaby jersey for a few years, I think I'm very much for that.
Now, Hullo, what do you reckon? Do you think that the impact's going to be detrimental to it, or do you you're going to be?
You know what? I don't know, man. Because after watching how they played against South Africa, bringing in Quaid, I think that perhaps this is the moment where these selections are going to pay dividends. I think there's so many that the likes of Jordan Pataia, Pete Samu, you know, they've come through the ranks on spring tours, and you know, we're watching them. But you know, we're watching what the Wallabies can actually bring and expose. I think for right now, I think the Wallabies are in the best position in regards to this, because we're starting to see no ghetto law. We're starting to see, you know, we're pulling players, Will Skelton's, you know, like the Will Skelton's of the world or whatever, the Luke Monahan. I always forget his last name. I don't know how to say it. I'm so sorry.
Hen. We teach English here too in the bonus point. We love it.
But this is exciting, dude. And I'm here for it. And I agree with what James said. We got to stop agreeing, James. This is what's happened to us.
Yeah,
we used to be polar opposites. Now we're just agreeing.
We got to bring back the Stephen A. Smith and the Skip Bayless effect.
I'm gonna shave my head and call myself Tames.
I think I agree with you, both of you. I think a lot of people have been talking about how this could be quite detrimental to the culture, and they've had a bit of a tight-knit group. Even though they've had people that have come from outside, they've been players that have played recently, like Samu Karevi. Obviously, he's coming in from Japan, but he was in the Wallabies format and team quite recently, where you've got guys like Will Skelton who haven't played in a Wallabies jersey for a long time. But I think when you add a guy like Will Skelton, the competition goes through the roof at training. And I think with the All Blacks as well, when you add a guy like Dane Coles, who's got so much experience, I think it'll just make the training camps so much better and just light a fire under a lot of guys. But let's move on. We'll talk about the All Blacks with that in mind, because they've got their first test match against USA coming up. But before we talk about the selections, the gameplay, all that kind of stuff, James, you brought up a good point before the show started, and there's a lot at stake for the US at the moment as a rugby nation. They obviously haven't qualified for a World Cup because they ended up losing, I believe it is Uruguay. But they do have a lot of different stakes for the US. So can you share your thoughts about what is at stake for USA, or what you believe the US should be doing right now to really cement themselves in the rugby world?
Yeah, right. So, mate, you could make the argument that this is one of the most important weekends in the history of USA rugby. They've got this big event. They're hosting the All Blacks. It's within the context of them trying to host the 2027 or 2031 Men's World Cup. And so they need to sell out the stadium this weekend, basically to demonstrate to world rugby that there's enough local appetite for high-level international rugby. And a full stadium will really boost the USA's bid to host. A half-empty stadium would be a considerable hit. So off the field and in terms of building and demonstrating the support and kind of capitalizing on the momentum of the MLR, filling this stadium is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And then the MLR, it does have some pretty strong momentum and is gaining inroads in the local sporting landscape. But if the USA national team aren't competitive, your rugby will probably lose momentum and probably take a hit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So if the USA team push the All Blacks and can demonstrate that they're a fast emerging rugby nation, it's a huge boost for the sport.
Yeah.
But if the All Blacks put a big score on the USA, the local rugby folks will probably struggle to accept that, and it could be damaging to the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the question here is, do you think that they have the possibility to do that? Like, a lot of people are saying that it's a foregone conclusion the All Blacks are going to win this match and win it convincingly. But USA have always been known to come from the underdog position and really get up for big matches. Like, you've seen in every Hollywood movie that covers sports, like, they come from the underdog position and they end up winning the match in really good fashion. So do you think that this is the opportunity that the US can do, or do you think it's just going to be All Blacks are going to win, it's going to be 100-0, that's it?
I hope it will be competitive. I fear that it'll be a blowout.
Okay. Hala, I know you don't want to agree with James, but do you think that it's a...
I'm going to take an approach here. I think USA have made inroads with their rugby program a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they can do to the All Blacks and chuck on 20-odd points, I think regardless of what the All Blacks score is, that goes a long way out here to show that they can play rugby and at some point be sort of competitive. And I say that because if teams like Tonga, Samoa, and Fiji can put 20-odd points on the All Blacks or the Wallabies or South Africa with no budget,
mm-hmm.
when you can put 20-odd points and you've got budget, from a business sense, that's something that you want to invest in. I think the MLR have made huge inroads in regards to making sure that the marketing strategy of rugby in the United States is definitely felt and heard, especially with teams like XO who are, you know, ex-professional athletes who have come over to rugby.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, and I honestly think the All Blacks could play their fourth best team and they're still going to blow them out. But if the USA can put on, I dare say, 20 to 22 points, which I think they can. I definitely think that they can.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think that goes a long way to showing, with a full stadium, that goes a long way into showing that rugby in the US over the next 10 years, 10 to 14 years, is going to be something that we should invest in, that world rugby should invest in. And I think it's very possible that they could, for sure.
Yeah.
I do also want to say, having said that, I can see that not happening as well.
Yeah.
I don't want to be negative.
Yeah.
But I definitely do believe the chances of being held zero is a lot less than them putting on 15 to 22 points.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Mm. Yeah. For anybody who doesn't know who the Colorado XOs are, like Hollis said, it's all ex-professional athletes or athletes that have come from different sports. So you've got, I believe Odell Beckham Jr.'s brother, who didn't crack the NFL and he wanted to play rugby, and now they're rebranded as the American Raptors. But a lot of people have argued that they've made significant inroads into helping develop the culture, and I agree with that. I coached the Giltini's Loyals Academy against them, and they were a great game. They have a lot of talented athletes, and I think if they have a couple of years to learn the game more and refine their skills, I think America's on the right track. But I agree. I think there is a lot at stake. I think some people who are rugby aficionados, like we were talking about before, is they'll be more realistic, but it doesn't come down just to them, as we need to get the public involved as well. So I think if they can get a good turnout out for the game this weekend, I will be there. I can't wait to see the crowd and see what
I'm telling you right now, all they need to do is get the Giltini's marketing staff and we're good.
It'll be
put Steve Aoki on one end and let's just see what happens.
I think the Giltinis can afford that. I don't think USA Rugby can afford that after the bankruptcy.
I'm just saying, get them on board. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, well, let's chat about who Ian Foster should name with this first test, because we've got a lot of different dynamics. We've got, like I said, a lot of experienced guys coming back over. We've got Sam Whitelock. We've got Dane Coles. We've got a few other people like Shannon Frizzell who were said to be the person that was going to take the sixth jersey and make it theirs. And now some other people have come about and made it their own to be very competitive. And then you've also got guys like Josh Lord from the Chiefs, who's never played in an All Blacks jersey, who's now been given an opportunity to play in a very, still very competitive position, like Sam Whitelock and Brodie Retallick are in there, very experienced All Blacks. So if you guys were looking at the players that should be named for this USA Test match, who do you guys think should be named in this and why? Hulla, I'll let you go first.
Well, the All Blacks are in a precarious position where I think their combinations haven't worked. They're just that good that they can name a 15 and a 22 that just handle business, except for one game this season. So from a coaching perspective, I'm trying to work on future combinations, but also trying to lock in what I think my 15 should look like. And with no disrespect to USA, I want to see that. I want to experiment with what I think should be working, and if it does click against a lesser ranked opponent. Having said that, I do think off the bench is where you want to get that experience in. And so, you know, for me, from a coaching perspective, I'd probably have a very I would much rather go an inexperienced bench with a 15 that can handle some stuff, just to see if the 15 that you think should work will work leading into the other tests. And you have that luxury with the first up test being against the lowest ranked side that you're going to play on this spring tour, that, you know, you're going to utilize your bench, that they can definitely handle the opposition at hand. But it's interesting because like I said, last episode, I haven't been impressed with the All Blacks. I don't want to say selections, but I definitely want to say combinations. Mm. So I think this could be one of those times where you could definitely be like, this is what my 15 looks like. Put some inexperience on the bench and bring them on just to get them in international rugby and then see what happens. But, you know, I think Ian Foster has, and his coaching staff have a lot to work with right now, which is now we're finding is the headache. So it's about filtering those selections.
Yeah. Now, James, we've spoken a lot on this podcast and in other conversations about their depth, and they've got that next man up mentality. But what do you think? Should they name like a completely young and hungry 15, or you think that Hull's right on the money with this?
Well, the All Blacks have got a tradition of not giving away cheap All Black jerseys and not ever really devaluing a selection. So I can't imagine them kind of going too far outside of their best 15. The other thing with my coach's hat on is if you put a new inexperienced 15 guys against USA and then a more experienced 15 play against Wales, how do you make your selections against Ireland?
Exactly.
If you're comparing a 13 that's scored 4 tries against USA against a 13 that's leaked a line break against Wales, you can't really reward the guy who played better against weaker competition.
Yeah.
So it might be tempting to give a whole lot of young guys caps, but I think there'll probably be a view to trying building combinations and playing your best team. And if you cop an injury against the USA, then the next man up and you've got the depth to cover.
Yeah. I agree. I think the combinations are definitely the right thing to experiment with. And I think for this game in particular, though, I think the most important thing is to use this game to focus on fixing their systems and the important stuff, because a lot of things that came down to the matches in the rugby championship, like your lineouts and how poor your execution was off set piece, they've got a unique opportunity to do this. And I think as long as they focus on executing those systems rather than just trying to let the ball flow and then trying to put 100 on that team, I think that's probably the most important thing. But speaking of that, when you look at the positions, like we said, a lot of players competing for those spots. So when you look at positions in the All Blacks, which one do you think is the most competitive? Because I've got a couple that I think are the most competitive in there at the moment. But James, which one do you think is the most competitive in the All Blacks system at the moment?
The back row makeup is always something we can debate. Last week we talked about nobody's really put their stamp on the number 13 jersey. So that's such a key position, and that's something the All Blacks will want to resolve at some stage over the next four matches on the spring tour. You want to have a better, a clearer idea about what is your depth and who is your preferred 13. And then there's probably still, we touched on this last week, how many Barretts is too many Barretts? Which one do you leave out?
There's only one Barrett.
Like, who do you play at 10 and 15?
Yeah.
Like, the 10 and 15 is there's an embarrassment of riches, but there's also some difficult decisions.
It's crazy that you say that when we were talking about the Barrett thing last week, because I totally forgot that if their older brother didn't have concussion issues, they're could potentially have been four Barretts in one All Black side, all starting. Because I think he was a, back rower or something. And I think if you have all of those, you got a lock, a flank, a 10 and a 15, all Barretts, be like, man, they just keep breeding them out and just keep making babies. Geez, they're killing it.
Put money on one of them scoring a try.
It'll be good. A Barrett score, something on the TAB. Yeah, what do you reckon, Holla? Most competitive spot?
Look, weirdly, again, it's the 10 and 15 that's up for grabs for me. I think the 13 is definitely up for grabs as well. But I'm going to bring in the halfback as well. I think the 19 combination hasn't been good for the All Blacks.
Yeah.
My personal preference is Smith and Mwanga as your 9 and 10 with Jordy Barrett at 15. I think the forward pack is always going to be competitive, but there's so much relativity there that it doesn't matter sort of who you bring in, they're going to give you the same amount of consistency and playmaking. When it comes to the 9-10-15 combination, that's when I start to worry because, you know, whether it's Weber, Smith, or Perenara, they play all differently. And they play all differently depending on who's at 10 and who's at 15.
Yeah.
So I'm also worried about that 9-10 combination. Mm-hmm. And then from that, secondary that 10-15.
And you also got Finley Christie coming in and trying to make his stamp as the newer
guy. And you know, and that's all well and good. I just think with Brad Weber still there, the sniff that you get is very limited because I think Weber's been the form halfback that we've seen.
I'd agree.
I think he's had the best game at number 9.
Yeah.
And from a coaching perspective, I think he is the number 9 that you want, regardless who's at 10 and 15.
No, I agree with that with the halfback aspect. I think I was talking to you and I was talking to the missus as well when we were watching the last All Blacks game when Perenara started. And I said, this is not the match that I want Perenara to jump in and start in All Blacks jersey. I think he's an amazing halfback. But for that particular match and this particular scenario, I didn't think he fit. And I agree with you. I think Brad Webber's probably had the most consistent campaign out of all the halfbacks. But I'm going to jump to the forwards because I think – at the moment, the hooker spot, that's probably very,
really?
Very up for grabs. You look at Al Moore, you got Dane Coles coming back in the mix, obviously off an injury, but he's got a lot of experience. Samisoni Tuckiaho, he's shown that he's not afraid to get his hands dirty and he's going to bring the heat every time he comes and plays in any jersey he comes for. And obviously Cody Taylor, he's the form hooker in my opinion, but you put all those four players in camp at the moment. I think Cody said it the most is like they're not there to hold tackle pads. They're going to be lighting each other up every session. And I think it's up to, like, I think Samisoni's probably not going to start any matches anytime soon. Maybe the All Blacks because of his good form in the last test, but maybe the USA game, I mean. But I think at the moment, it's up for grabs for anyone. I think obviously Cody Taylor can get knocked off. Can Dane or Al Moore do it? Because Al Moore was called as the next coming for the hooker spot.
Well, I think Al Moore was definitely hailed that because that's an inside center turned hooker. So, you know, all jokes aside, he's got the ball skills and can read the game really well.
Yeah.
For me, I think Tuckiaho is probably the next in line in regards to formidable hooking from the get-go. And I think also his mauls are insane.
Oh, yeah.
He controls the back of the maul really well and can – I think his ball handling, it does need a bit of work and his gameplay. But you put Dane Coles with Almoa or Takiaho in a system, in a spring tour, I think they're going to learn a lot too. So I think the players we're going to see, whoever they choose first up, and the players that we're going to see at the end of the tour are going to be different.
Yeah.
But I agree with you that Cody Taylor is the form hooker that starts. Mm-hmm. How that looks in 2 years.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting
That's going to be interesting. Evolve. Yeah.
But James, I think you had a good point when you started off chatting about this, is the back row is always up for discussion because, like I said, Sam Kane's coming back in from injury. A lot of people aren't expecting him to just hit the ground running because he's only had one game in the Heartland competition, which is below NPC. No one's expecting him to come back and be the All Blacks captain. But you look at players who did an amazing job when he was away from the squad. Dalton Popoli, he's hungry, and I think he had a couple of really good games. Ethan Blackadder has been very surprising to a lot of people. A lot of people thought that he was a good Super Rugby player but didn't expect him to have this type of impact at international test level. And you've got guys like Frizzell, Jacobson, the list goes on, and you've got guys that aren't even in the squad. I think you hit nail on the head. Is the back row is always up for discussion. And I didn't even mention Akita.
Yeah, and if Sam Kane doesn't need to be your captain, does that
we said this last year? We said this last year
because you got Whitelock stepping in as the captain, so that frees up a lot of selections. So I understand where you're coming from with that.
Can we all agree that Akira Yuane has had one of the greatest test seasons we've ever seen a test player have?
I wouldn't say ever, but I definitely think no. I agree with you in a sense that he has been he's been in the system for a long time, and there's a lot of time where he didn't get any opportunities, or he
let himself down. Let's be real. Like, you got the opportunity.
But he had a really good finish to the last rugby championship campaign. He came in this one. He was hungry. He was a workhorse. And I think he's really shown that he deserves the sixth jersey.
I'm just saying he's the better Ioane in the All Blacks team. That's what I'm trying to say.
I mean, at the moment, I mean, when you go from actually, no, that was last year when he did the one-handed.
It wasn't
fun.
I think the back three for the All Blacks and the Wallabies, headaches. It's been a very long time since we can actually genuinely say that.
Yeah.
I think the back three for the Wallabies is just as much, if not maybe a little more of a headache than the All Blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because we haven't seen from the Wallabies back three individually what they can do collectively, if that makes sense. We've sort of seen all the combinations with the All Blacks, but with the Wallabies, we're what-ifing a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, not to digress, but I'm super excited for that too. I'm also going to make a prediction that the Wallabies do not lose a test match.
Oh,
and if anything, they're about to cause a lot of havoc, and people are going to be taking notice of the Wallabies.
I'm 50-50 on that, but
nah, dude, I've got a feeling, bro.
All right, let's table the Wallabies chat because we want to get through all the All Black stuff before we jump on.
Yeah, the most important team in the world.
But we'll finish this conversation off because I do want to talk to you guys about the most important match during this Northern Tour. So obviously we've got an interesting setup. We've got starting off with the US, then we've got Wales, then we've got Ireland, go to Italy, and then we finish off with a pretty strong French side. So I'll bounce back to you, and then James, you can answer after. If you look at each match, which is the most important for the All Blacks?
I'm going to be honest with you. Like I said earlier, I think the All Blacks are in a very precarious position of they don't know who their top 15 are right now, and they don't know what their best 22 looks like. So I think we're going to see different teams. And when I say different teams, I just mean slight changes coming into every game. I think they're definitely going to take every game very seriously. Like James said, is you can't just get an All Blacks jersey. You got to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching hat on, I definitely think they're looking at the Ireland and the Wales game very seriously. I think also too, and it's the hoodoo, it's the French hoodoo. For some odd reason, they just seem to, doesn't matter what's on paper, the team that you've got on paper, we play France and it's just shit goes out the window. Like quite literally. So I definitely think that there's a deliberate reason why that one's last. But I think they're trying to formulate the best way to move forward for the next few years leading into the World Cup to make sure that that 22 gets stronger week by week. So then by the time they play the French, you see complete and utter dominance. Whether that happens or not, I'm not too sure, and I'm not really giving you a straight answer. But I think they're definitely – the games have been strategically planned. And I think they're definitely going – I of all the games, between the All Blacks and the Wallabies, I definitely want to say that the All Blacks have the most to lose and the most that they're unknown about. Because I think the Wallabies have really they've shaped their season really well. And I think Dave Rennie's done a ridiculous job coaching and has, as a coach, done way more for their team than Ian Foster has. So there's a headache involved with the All Blacks right now. And it makes me nervous to what we could see.
Yeah.
Leading into it and then seeing what happens out of it.
Mm. James?
I agree that the French game will tell us the most about where the All Blacks are. And it'll also kind of tell us about where the Southern Hemisphere is in comparison to the Northern Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
The France-NZ game and the Australia-England game, mm-hmm. that's probably the two form Northern Hemisphere teams and the two form Southern Hemisphere teams,
mm-hmm.
According to the rugby championships. So I'm very interested in that French game. And France obviously didn't send out their best test side to play in Australia. So they've now got a really big pool of talented, experienced test players. And I think they can really trouble New Zealand at home.
Definitely. Yeah.
I think the Wales and Ireland game are potential banana skins. So if the All Blacks are looking too far ahead, one of those two could trip them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the Italy game will be the most unwatchable game because Italy will just take all the rugby out of the game and try not to lose by too much.
Yeah. And so
borderline unwatchable, and I'll probably just sleep in.
Yeah. Watch the mini recap on Stan.
I look forward to the spring tour because we can just be awake. It's normal hours for us.
Yeah. So aside from the USA game, like we can watch anything.
I'll be watching it. Yeah.
But I agree with both of you. Obviously, the French game is the true test to see where the All Blacks are because I think they're the most neck and neck team in this tour, but I think that the Ireland game is the most important. I think we all agree that the USA is a foregone conclusion because the All Blacks are going to get the win. The Wales game, though, I think if you were talking a year ago, I think it definitely would have been a test. But I think right now they're quite a depleted team at the moment with a lot of injuries and different instances. So I don't think that the Wales game is going to be the true test or true opportunity to get the tune-up game before France. But yeah, I do think the Ireland game, when you look at them to test the weak points in the rugby championship after those couple of tune-up games, I think with USA and Wales, Fozzie's going to be really focusing on fixing their poor line-out execution like we spoke about last week, their decision-making from set piece and also from phase play. It was terrible. There was a few opportunities that they capitalized on, but not at the rate that the All Blacks are used to. So I think they really want to get on top of that. Ireland, I think it's not going to be neck and neck, but at least quite competitive leading into this. But yeah, let's finish off talking about the All Blacks and let's jump onto the Wallabies because James is sporting a pretty nice Wallaby shirt. I want to show that off because it's looking mighty good. But yeah. The Wallabies tour, I think like Huller said, it's going to be a great test of where they truly stand on the world stage. And I think the first game with Japan is going to be interesting because Japan really haven't had an opportunity to prepare because they haven't been able to play any test matches. And I think it's going to be something of an interesting game. But Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown, if you know anything about their coaching style, I think they can prep a team in their sleep. So James, do you reckon that the Wallabies will get a run from their money by the Japanese side? Or do you think it's just going to be a good tune-up game for the Wallabies?
I think this will be tight. I think this could kind of – it's possible that the Wallabies drop this match if they're not kind of entirely mentally up and ready for this match. If they're looking weeks ahead, this is a bit of a banana skin game too. So this is a good Japanese team. They may not have the combinations and the kind of form that we have, because we've played a lot of tests this year already. So I think that should probably see us through combinations and talent. But home game for the Japanese, and they play well at home, and they've got a big spirit. And I think they've had a very good look at the Wallabies. So they will have scouted and prepared for us very well. And I think this will be tough.
I think when you look at Stan Sport, is getting the opportunity to watch the Japanese competition. A lot of people didn't get an opportunity to watch that competition over the last few years. And now having that, Stan's done a great job to give them the availability to watch all those games. It's some great rugby over there. And I agree with you. I think that Japan, if they're able to disrupt the Wallabies, they're a team that really thrives on a scrappy, more frantic style of play, and they capitalize on that, especially off turnovers. So I think if you are right, if they've had a pretty rough week of travel, or if they've haven't prepared properly, or if they're still focusing on games ahead against England and other sides, I definitely think it is an opportunity for Japan to knock them off, which I honestly don't think it will happen. I think the Wallabies will come prepared. I don't think Dave Rennie will settle for any of that crap. He'll be saying, focus on this game, don't focus on anything else. But yeah, what do you reckon, Holly? Do you reckon Japan knock off the Wallabies?
Japan win.
I reckon.
I just want to say something controversial. look, I'm not 100% against that though. I honestly think you hit the nail on the head. When Japan beat South Africa, it's because they broke down their play and disrupted them enough that they couldn't adapt. And here's the thing. Japan are very good at doing that. When they do it, especially at home, that momentum shift is like playing the All Blacks in Eden Park. You just don't know what's about to happen and you're overwhelmed. If I see the Blossoms win, I'm not surprised. I will say that. And I think Tony Brown and Jamie Joseph are ridiculous coaches. And let it be known that they've gone to the next level of making sure that they can choose the players who are eligible, not just what the Japanese Rugby Union Association, whatever they're called, want to be in the team.
Yeah.
So they're going to be choosing. They've got a pool of Western players who have been slept on by Super Rugby or the Heineken Cup or whatever, who are now in Japan, and that. Like, you know, it's like seeing Pacific Island, like Samoa versus Tonga, right? Now you're about to see these guys that haven't got contracts in Australia about to go, all right, cool. Well, I'm going to show you what you missed out on.
Yeah.
And they're being coached really well.
Yeah.
So I'm actually, that's a game that I actually am really looking forward to.
I'm bringing my fire stick to.
Dude, I just want to see old Japanese men cry when they beat the Wallabies. I'm sorry. If that doesn't touch you in the heart, you just don't love rugby. There's something wrong with you.
Well, James, I think we saw it firsthand when we went over and watched all the World Cup. We went to do the watch the opening game with Japan, and there was just the passion inside the little bar that we were in, just watching the game. And some of the guys, you could tell they didn't know any of the rules. They were just so happy to see their home nation just going up against sleeping giants. It was pretty awesome. So I think, Japanese, the atmosphere is definitely going to be something where I'm going to go, man, that's
intimidating.
It's going to be something different. Yeah, but I think we spoke a lot about the Wallabies with a lot of players coming into the squad, but we haven't really spoken about some of the players that have gone out of the squad. And one of those players is Marika Korobidi. So he's obviously gone from the squad for a couple of different reasons. But when we look at the back three, I think we've obviously had a big conversation. You guys are big advocates for James O'Connor in that 15 jersey with Quaid at 10. Ooh. If you guys were naming your back three, who would you guys pick out of the squad that was named?
We'll head over to the resident Wallaby supporter here.
assuming that Quaid Cooper was 10, I would pick O'Connor at 15. And then I would pick Kellaway on one wing and Tom Wright on the other wing.
Yeah, that's a good combination. Not bad. Because they're both Brumbies players, correct?
Tom Wright's a Brumbies player.
And then
Kellaway is a Rebels player.
Rebels player.
So Tom Wright hasn't been in great form. He's had his moments, but I think he's a really big talent. Mm-hmm. And we need to kind of put our most talented guys forward and kind of be embrace a bit of risk in selections and make sure we know a little bit more about these guys and where they sit for World Cup in 2 years.
Yeah.
If Cooper's not available, I think you move O'Connor to 10 and Kellaway to 15 and give him some game time at 15.
Ooh, actually.
I agree with that. So then who put on the other wing? You keep Wright. Who else do you put?
Wright. You've got the option of Hodge or Pattaya. Pattaya's going to have a good test soon at some stage or he'll fall out of favour.
Yep. I'd probably give Pattaya that opportunity to start on the other wing if Quaid isn't available, because I really like Hodge as that utility back, really coming off the bench and being able to provide step into any position, really. So six and his positions. Kicking game, his kicking game is crazy. What do you reckon?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Again, O'Connor 15, Kellaway on one wing. Look, call me a. Maybe I'm just being too nice. I think Pattaya on the other wing, purely because I think he's due for a good game, and I think he deserves the shot. I also think looking into the next World Cup, and you know, I'm going to sound like a broken record here. I think Quaid and Karevi are your 10-12.
Oh hell yeah!
And I think Baisami or Ikitau at 13 is definitely the only options that you've got. Not because that they're the only options you got, but because they are definitely the best 13 option. Mm-hmm. And I think Pattaya is quickly losing favor in any center position. And I just think he has an X factor that needs to be exploited. And I believe that Quay Cooper is the type of player right now at 10 that can really unleash it and really mentor him and give him the gameplay that makes him shine. We add O'Connor in at 15, and I honestly believe that's sort of a combination that will threaten any world team, any top tier team at the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And dare I say it, be the back line that actually could actually put teams on notice. So that's sort of what I see. I like Kellaway too. I think Kellaway is there. I think Kellaway is not going anywhere at all right now. I love him. The fact that he can cover 15 is a big blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I'm not a fan of Hodge at all. I think
you never have been, have you?
Never have been. look, Hodge is a great player. And I hate, you know, what's that saying? Like, I've totally forgotten it now. It's a big ad out here. You know, I'm a man of many trades or whatever it is. He's like
a jack of all trades,
right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. A jack of all trades, master of none. That's a load of crap, right? If you can cover every backline position in international rugby, my dog, it's better to be that than to be a master of none, right?
Yeah.
So I think Hodge is awesome and an awesome asset. But he's been in the system for too long and the Wallabies have trusted players that can be, you know, okay, I can play wing or center or 10 or fullback or I got a good kick. And I think with a back line, when you've got a specialist 10, a specialist 12, a specialist 13, and wingers that can just do their job and a 15 that can just do their job at a exponential rate,
mm-hmm.
that's when you start asking questions of other teams. And I think Pattaya hasn't been given the foundation at international level just to like play your position, my bro.
Yeah.
With a 10 and a 12 that do their job.
Mm. So that raises a good question, because obviously we all agree that Quaid and Samu are the 10 and 12 there, who are in form right now. But Paisami's coming out of was it an injury or was he just out of the system, or why wasn't he in the squad for the rugby championship? I'm pretty sure it was an injury, right?
I honestly can't remember.
Birth of a child.
There you go. Yeah. So he's been out of the system for a little bit. But one name that I saw that got named in the centers, uncapped Isaiah Parisi.
Parisi, nah, bro.
So I know. Nah, I don't think
that's your boy, James. Nah,
I don't think
right out of Coogee.
I don't think he's obviously going to start off because he's uncapped and Dave Rennie knows how to bring people into the system. But I think he could potentially come off the bench for this Japanese team if he gets a good training camp in. Do you guys think that he has a future in the Wallabies jersey or is this his?
Nope.
No. Okay. There you go. James, what do you reckon? No.
Okay. Can I, before, sorry, James, before you say anything, I think he's an amazing player. I think he's proven himself. I think that that guy could have played for the Kangaroos, Australian Kangaroos, in rugby league, or the Wallabies, definitely. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous talent. I just think right now, where it's going, where rugby's going, I just think his best position's in the centers. And there's guys in the centers right now that are just better than him. And I can't see them slowing down anytime soon. He would literally have to do a Sonny Bill and just do some things. And I don't, and I think he can. I think he's that talented that he can.
But just comparatively to the players at the moment that have cemented himself.
Exactly. Yeah. I just think that he hasn't been held accountable at that level as a player to perform week in, week out at international status.
Okay. Super rugby, but not test. Okay.
All not right, even cool. Super rugby. And that's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. You're cut off. All right. There we go. James, what do you got?
He had a very good Super Rugby season before his injury. And he was by far the best player on an underperforming TARS team.
Yeah, so
you don't know if he's tested.
He's an underperforming TARS team. That's what he said. That's the key. That's the key phrase there, bro. I'm just saying.
That's the biggest understatement that's ever been spoken on this podcast.
Come on now, bro.
Underperforming, mate. I don't know. Like he's similar but lesser than the centers we already have.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd have to be a few injuries. If there's a few injuries and he got a start, I think he'd do a good job for us. But I don't think he will push ahead of the kind of Karevi, Ikitau, Paisami guys.
Yeah.
I don't see a situation where he pushes ahead of them in the depth before the World Cup.
Okay, cool. All right, we spoke about it before, the most important test match for the All Blacks. What is the most important test match for the Wallabies? I'll come right back to you, James. Which one do you think is the most important out of this lineup?
Everyone's just talking about the England test.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a lot of kind of optimism and hope amongst the Wallabies fans at the moment. We've got a terrible record at Eden Park against the All Blacks, and we've got a pretty terrible record against England. And there's been some of the Wallabies' lowest moments have been at Twickenham. But, mate, I'm optimistic, and I'm one of those optimistic Wallabies fans, and that England game will give us a real good barometer about whether we're genuinely kind of pushing back into that top tier.
They're on a roll. They're on a roll. They're coming back. Okay. Well, I think, yeah, England, definitely an interesting match. I want to see that play out because you never know what's going to happen with the momentum that the Wallabies are on. I personally think the true test match for the Wallabies is going to be the Scotland match. Not because they're neck and neck, but I think because Scotland have only had one warm-up match against Tonga. And although they do have some impressive players on their squad, they're clearly never the favourites to win the Six Nations every year, which hurts me to say because my family's part Scottish. I don't like saying that. And we went to a World Cup game and they got pounded by Ireland. But if they get a convincing win over Japan, saying the Wallabies beat the Scots and then put up a good fight in the last matches, I think we can say that's a successful tour for them. I honestly could say that. But if they can't get a decent win over the Scottish squad who have had limited preparation, I personally think that we have to look at the Wallabies in a different light, and they obviously can play people in a rugby championship, but can they play teams from all around the world? So that's my personal opinion. I think Scotland's a great test for them, and yeah, we'll see. But what do you reckon?
I think weather plays a big part in these test matches, and the reason, I mean, it's quite obvious that we had the rugby championship was quite a dry campaign majority. Here's the thing though. I think I agree with you in that the most important game is Scotland in regards to what they do during that game. I think what they do against England on the field though, regardless of the outcome, determines the trajectory for what the next 2 years looks like.
Elaborate.
So I think, winning by 1 point against England means more than putting 40 on Scotland. Or losing by 40 to Scotland and beating England by one. I think, and the reason why I say that is because I think what we're going to see is, again, pending the environment that they play in, is what's working and what's not. Now, I 100% purely believe the Wallabies have a better chance of winning every game than the All Blacks do in this spring tour. And I'm backing the Wallabies to win every game. Not comfortably. I think they'll have a couple of tough matches. I think they beat England personally by like 14 points. I think it's going to be tight and then they just finish nice and strong. And I purely believe that because I just think their bench is going to be a lot tougher, especially in the front row. And England are starting to look to, they want to bring in a nice young number 10. You know, they're looking to see where their future looks. And I just think Australia can exploit that. And again, I don't mean to sound like a broken record. The main guy here is Quade Cooper. If Quade Cooper can direct his troops around that field really well, and Hooper can direct that forward pack in particular really well, regardless of the environment that they're playing in, I think the Wallabies are going to be very successful and finish the year on a real big high. And that trajectory against England, regardless of the win margin, because I do not think they lose at all, is going to be moving into quite a adventurous and pretty interesting rugby championship next year.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it'll be an interesting campaign. I just never support the Wallabies, so I can't do it. But okay, let's chat about the new players named in the squad. So we'll finish off with that. Out of the new players, who are you guys most excited about?
We've got, define new players.
So I would say players that haven't played in the rugby championship and are now in this squad.
Will Skelton, come on, bro. Yeah. Have we not looked? That guy is a specimen, dude. Yeah.
Well, he's playing pretty well over in the top he's playing at the moment.
Dude, yeah. they just needed a big. That's what they needed, and they got him.
Yeah.
You've got him. You've got, you know, they got their Sam Whitelock and Brody Retallick. That's what you got.
Who, so Will Skelton, your Brody Retallick or your Sam Whitelock?
He's the combination of Will Skelton is right now one of the best second rowers in the world.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I want him to be in all, but I want him to play for Tonga. He's a shame he's Samoan.
But James, before I ask who your most important player is or who you're excited about is, who would you pair with Skelton in this middle locking pair?
So at full strength, I'd believe Adam Coleman and Skelton. Mm-hmm. I think that's our best locking pair for the next
Adam
World
Coleman's
Cup.
Adam Coleman, just for the record.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We get it. Tongans are cool, all right?
And Samoans. Okay, I just don't want to.
He's Tongan via Tasmania, I think.
Yeah, Adam Coleman.
Via Tasmania.
Tongamania. It sounds like a wrestling show.
You're welcome.
Okay, and who are you most excited to see when the new people in the squad?
Big Willie Skelton too. I think when Wallabies fans talk about who's playing overseas that would walk into a Wallabies team, Will Skelton is usually the first name. Samu Karevi is the second. And then McMahon is usually the third.
Yeah.
So there's a situation where potentially all three of those guys could feature in a starting 15.
Yeah.
And we're getting close to that optimal, most talented 15 Wallabies.
100%. Mm. 100%.
It'll be interesting. I can't wait to see it. I personally do like Latu coming back in the squad. He's obviously not the informed player that he was back in the day, but I think he's doing a lot in the top 14 at the moment. Yeah, he's playing quite well, and I think he's going to provide a lot of experience. We talked about mentorship from Quade, how Quade is mentoring a lot of the younger players. He's obviously been through a lot of stuff. Latu obviously hasn't been through as much adversity as Quade, but I think he's able to provide a unique perspective on the game, being a veteran of the Wallabies jersey, playing in multiple competitions and multiple climates, multiple styles of rugby. I'm really excited to see Latu in a Wallabies jersey again if he does get the opportunity. But yeah.
Also Tongan.
Speaking of Tongan, Samoan and Fijian, we're going to finish off the show talking briefly just about the Moana Pacifica and the Fijian Indrua. So we do want to talk about the best signing so far. James, I will go to you first because there are a couple of former Wallabies that have been signed in this Moana Pacifica team out of Leili Afano and Kepu. Who are you most excited to see back in Super Rugby?
Well, I think it's quite telling that those are the two marquee signings because it's a prop and a 10, and you build your team around like a really quality prop and a quality 10. They're both big game players, lots of experience, big names that will help sell tickets. So I think those two are a very good kind of base around which you kind of build out a Pacifica team.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that a lot of the other Pacifica talent will be kind of a lot of New Zealand-based Samoan and Tongan guys, possibly Fijian guys, who are kind of on the rise and potentially kind of just beyond like the Kiwi super teams, but certainly that talent.
Yeah.
So, mate, I think they'll be very strong, very strong. And that's a good starting point with a prop and a 10.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that are in the, on the fringes of squads for Super Rugby that have been snubbed for a long time because, like we said a million times, there's just so much depth in New Zealand. There's only so many teams, but I think this obviously provides an opportunity for both Fijian players and Samoan and Tongan players. I do briefly want to ask you guys a quick question. I want to throw out a boomerang and see what you guys think. So to both of you, in regards to Leili Afano, he's obviously had his issues with his health. He's been out of Super Rugby for a little while. But do you think this could potentially resurrect his career in a Wallabies jersey like it has with Quaid? Is there a possibility?
No.
Nah.
No. And I only say that because I think Quay Cooper lost his jersey due to his off-field antics, not him as a player.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be biased. I just think Quay Cooper's been the form number 10 in Australia for a very long time.
Yeah.
And he got caught up in off-field antics. And now we're seeing the best 10 that Australia's produced since Michael Liner and Stephen. I say Stephen Larkham, actually, because Stephen Larkham was the man.
with his head screwed on straight.
With his head screwed on, like, regain. And I also think just the way we're looking at international rugby and Super Rugby go, that Quade's the guy that can really lead this team around at a pace that Leili Afano hasn't played at for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that Leili Afano could come into it and handle it. Yeah, that's what I think. And I just think with Matt Tamua now bowing out graciously, and I held Matt Tamua over Leili Afano in the later years of that international sort of career. So
yeah. Okay.
That's my opinion.
No, that's interesting. James, do you agree?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't think again, it all depends on, like, if we cop two or three injuries at 10 and Leili Afano gets a kind of SOS, then it's good to know that he's playing in the Super Rugby and still playing high level week in, week out. But I think a fair bit would have to go wrong before he pushed into a Wallabies 23.
Yeah. Okay, Hala. Proud Tongan man. Obviously, you're happy about the Pacifica team being there. Who are you excited about seeing in this team?
Dude, you know what? I want to see the whole squad.
Before you make like your call. Predictions.
Look, I think they're going to be competitive, definitely.
Mm.
I think here's my worry, and this is a worry for any Pacific Islander, is we're good for 30 minutes. Maybe 55.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. I think the best thing that we've got going for us is that we're choosing New Zealand-based. The main squad is going to be fringe players for Super Rugby teams, New Zealand-based, which is awesome because, you know, obviously they're in the system, so they know that it's 80 minutes. That's also the downside is because we're choosing fringe players who were 80-minute players. Going off of what James said, we've got Sakopi Kepu and Christian Leili Afano, right? Yeah. Let's be honest, they're not form players right now, okay? Like, they are amazing signees with amazing rugby IQ and leadership skills, but they're not the guys that are going to, perhaps, if we're going to be quite blunt, they're not going to lead a team to a rugby championship in the next 2 to 3, 4 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's just something where we need to see the full squad before we can say, oh, yeah, Lele Fano is going to be our starting 10 or something like that.
Right. But I will also say, though, being Pacific Islander and a proud Polynesian, this is also the team you don't want to piss off, because if there's ever going to be that Coach Carter come from behind, remember the Titans team, this is the team.
Yeah,
this isn't going to be a team that are taking this lightly. Mm-hmm. There's beyond all, beyond whatever it is that they're being offered financially, the fact that they get to play at this level and represent their families and making sure that they can represent their people at an international competition that's held so highly that they can definitely make a difference to their families' lives. I think that's something that other Super Rugby teams need to be wary about, because we're not talking about a couple of players here, a couple of your Polynesian players. We're talking a whole freaking squad. We're talking about at that training sessions, we're going to see those fringe players trying to literally take off the heads of the starting players.
Yeah.
And that is like, and for like people that don't know, there's village competitions that take place in Australia and New Zealand. And the general gist is, if you can play a village comp, you can play Super Rugby, because you're not being hit as hard. You're not being pushed as hard.
Clothesline Central. I love it. Yeah,
not even Clothesline Central, bro. It's get clothesline, get up, and then being like, just hold your head and hold the ball in the other hand. Keep running. So I think there's definitely something to be said to see what I think what the Moana Pacifica team are going to bring is a lot of heart. I just want that heart to be met with the right conditioning and the right mental and rugby IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're very dangerous.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. I think a couple of the players that I do want to mention is the guys that have had experience in Super Rugby. It's Henry Tafu and Anari. They're both guys that have played in clubs like that. They know what to expect from the professionalism side, the mental aspect, all that stuff. And I think with Tafu, for example, he's a guy that played with a bunch of like ragtag players, like Richard Kahui and a bunch of other random players that came in and played for the Western Force. But he's going to be playing now with a bunch of guys that he's played rugby with, same culture. He's able to bond with them and probably build a big rapport with them. I
just reckon they should sign Israel Folau. That's all I'm saying.
Oh man, that would be a marquee signing. That would be interesting. Oh man, he's killing it in league right now. He's doing all right.
I don't know. I've stopped following him on Instagram.
But I think for the Fijian team, I really like Nasoko as well. He's come from Sevens. He had a really bad ACL injury.
Fijian draw, they're going to be a problem, dude. Yeah.
So I think we may wait until the squad comes out and we'll chat about how they stack up fully, because then we'll be able to see everyone in their spot. Because you see guys like Momi Adonu, who's a guy that a lot of people may not know, but he's been electric in the NPC comp for Northland. But the last point we want to talk about just really briefly is, you were talking about mental aspect, the proper proper way to bring people into a professional scenario. Mm-hmm. We've got two really interesting coaches. So we've got Aaron Major for the Moana Pacifica, who I think is a really, really good coach.
Great coach.
And Mick Byrne, who has been a very experienced coach. But James, you mentioned it off camera. He's never been a head coach before. He was a skills coach for the All Blacks, but he's never had to been the bad cop in that scenario. So I know you know his career pretty well, and him as a coach. Do you think that he can pull this off for this Fijian team and the culture as well?
Mate, it's I hope so. Like, I'm a big supporter of Fijian rugby, and I think the selection of Mick Byrne was quite an interesting one. For a long time, he's been considered the top skills coach in the world, firstly with the All Blacks and then with the Wallabies. I think this is his first full-time head coaching role. So he's excellent with core skills, excellent with unit skills, and apparently he's a good kind of relationship builder and a good vibes guy. But kind of taking the lead of a team, which has quite a distinct culture, which is different from the Aussie culture. Plenty of challenges, and I'll be interested to see how it goes.
James, as a head coach, could I ask you what do you think differs between what can he bring from being, let's say, the best skills coach in the world into the primary leadership position as the head coach, or what may he lack the head coach.
Well, he's been working very, very closely under the most successful All Blacks teams, won a couple of World Cups with them, and then he's worked under a couple of Wallabies coaches. So he won't be ignorant in any of the areas of strategy. It's kind of almost the perfect apprenticeship to kind of sit in that team environment, pick up strategy. He'd probably decide what he likes in terms of off attack and defense. And I think he'll probably have a pretty big playbook ready to roll out.
Right.
But then he hasn't kind of coached a team week in, week out, made tactical adjustments, manage difficult personalities in a team environment. And I'm not sure. We'll kind of see. I think he'll be very good. He's very highly regarded and very popular with all the players he coaches.
Yeah.
Good vibes guy, apparently.
And he's also come from, obviously, Japan coaching there as well for the Japanese team and Scotland as well. So I think he's got an opportunity to, like you said, use all the best things that he's learned from all these different teams and campaigns. He's able to refine the more veteran players and make sure their skills are on point. He's able to build up a lot of newer players and make sure that they can start off the right way. I think the one thing that's going to be interesting is it's just the initial campaign. It's a lot of pressure bringing it. It's not stepping into a team where it's like we've had a history for 50 years, just come in and just right the ship. This is a brand new campaign. So this could either go very, very well, or this could crash and burn because he's got so many different factors coming against it.
Well, that's to Aaron Major too. I mean, you're talking culturally. This has never been done before. So you're giving two coaches who, and let's be real, I mean, I think is it Aaron Major like he's Samoan?
He's Samoan. I think he's Tahitian. He's Cook Island as well. Right. So I think with that, I think he's the perfect coach you can put there because he's a counter.
Right. I mean, that's all well and good, but let's be quite real here. You're talking about Pacific Islanders.
Yeah.
South Pacific teams, which unless you grow up in the islands, you know, those stresses of like just being able to be in those teams too. So I'm really interested to watch them as coaches because, you know, this is one of those moments where it's you could have taken Scott Robertson, Crusaders coach.
Yeah.
And even then, you're like, could he do it?
Yeah.
Could he do it? Taking one of these teams. So it's going to be interesting to see them adapt culturally. And then you then add the stresses of the first sort of teams that they're going to deal with.
Well, I think Major's got a leg up from Mick because he was already a part of that game between the Māori All Blacks and the Moana. He was one of the coaches. So it'll be interesting. He's been a head coach before. He's coached for the Highlanders. He's coached for the Leicester Tigers. So I think he's got some experience and he's obviously a veteran All Black. I think he's got something like 45 or 46 tests or something like that. It's going to be interesting. I think we'll wait till the teams come off full list, and then we'll go from there and we'll be able to compare them. But, yeah, thank you for tuning in to the Bonus Point Podcast. It's been a pleasure. I'm going to be jumping in to DC to go watch the
Blacks jealous.
Take on the US. Lots of interesting situations for there. But, boys, anything to add before we finish off?
Nah, G, up the All Blacks. Yeah. And the Wallabies, mark my words, I said it before, James, the Wallabies aren't going to drop a test match this tour.
Hope you're right, mate.